We have on the phone with us Adam Shapiro. He is a Jewish American organizer with the International Solidarity Movement, and he also lived in the occupied territories, the Palestinian occupied territories, for 3 years. Hello, Adam.
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah.
If you can speak up as much as possible. Unfortunately, we're having some technical difficulties with the phone here, and it would help us a lot if you could speak up as much as you possibly can.
Okay, will do.
Thank you. Can you tell us about the International Solidarity Movement? What is your mission? What is the work that you do?
The International Solidarity Movement is a Palestinian-led, nonviolent direct action movement seeking to take action against the Israeli occupation inside the occupied territories. It brings together both Palestinian and international individuals and grassroots community organizations working together on the ground in the occupied territories, and we utilize all sorts of techniques and tactics to, from removing roadblocks to marching against Israeli checkpoints to sleeping in homes and escorting ambulances to protect Palestinian people, anything of that variety to help support and sustain a Palestinian nonviolent movement.
Who founded the group?
A few different Palestinian organizations on the ground, as well as individuals such as Huwaid Araf and Neta Golan are a couple of the founders, co-founders of the ISM.
And they're both women. Neta Golan, she is an Israeli woman, correct?
That is correct, yeah.
And Huwaida is a Palestinian-American woman from Michigan?
Right.
Who's actually your wife, right?
She is.
Okay. Now, Adam, so is any of the work that the International Solidarity Movement does is, I guess, kind of what would be an obvious question to some people who are very pro-Israeli government would be, is this a violent organization? Is there any violent principles? What is your position? What is the group's position, for example, on suicide bombing?
Well, the ISM is completely nonviolent. We go through training of our activists when they come to the occupied territories. The Palestinians who participate in the ISM also go through training and work together in groups and remain nonviolent, both in their actions and also even in terms like their language. They won't. We don't adopt any sort of violent language against soldiers or against settlers or anything like that. We are completely nonviolent as a group, and we support a nonviolent movement in Palestine. A grassroots Palestinian movement needs, a nonviolent movement like this needs the support, needs resources, and that resource is the international presence. We recognize the right of Palestinians to resist the occupation using armed struggle as using legitimate armed struggle as guaranteed by international law, but that does not include the attacks on civilians or non-combatants, and we do not condone those sort of methods.
What kinds of things have the International Solidarity Movement, what kinds of things has this group accomplished? You just described how it's people from all around the world who come to do things such as ride in ambulances, monitor checkpoints, things like this. What types of things do you feel this group has accomplished?
I think first and foremost, one thing that is sort of intangible but that is very important is that we've given hope, in a sense, in breaking the feeling of isolation among the Palestinian people. Unfortunately, the Palestinians feel that the world doesn't care what's going on, that they don't care what's happening to them. And partly this is because many of the images of what's happened to the Palestinian people, including the terrible attack on the Jenin refugee camp last spring, were broadcast all around the world, and yet we didn't see the United Nations, we didn't see the United States or any other country take action to try and end the siege on Jenin or any other city, or to try and get Israeli forces to withdraw from the occupied territories. And so the Palestinian people feel that basically the world doesn't care what's happening to them. And so the presence of internationals from the biggest cities such as Ramallah and Nablus to the smallest villages throughout the occupied territories is helping to show to the Palestinian people that there is support for them, that they're not being ignored, that there is a support for their human rights and their human dignity and their struggle for freedom.
What kinds of things are happening to Palestinian people? You lived in the occupied territories for 3 years, and obviously you've spent time in some pretty war-torn regions. What happened? What is happening to Palestinians?
Basically, every single day there are acts of violence being committed against Palestinian civilians anywhere in the occupied territories. There is, of course, killing of innocent civilians, of people inside their homes, of people sitting on their front steps, of people walking in the street trying to get to school or to work. But beyond even just the violence, there's sort of the daily humiliation of living under occupation. Just simply trying, for instance, in Nablus, to get from one side of the city to the other side of the city means walking through a gauntlet, basically, of Israeli soldiers, of checkpoints and roadblocks, sometimes enduring up to 5 or 6 hours, sometimes even more, of having to wait at a checkpoint, just trying to get from one side of the city to the other. These are areas that are completely Palestinian. This is inside a Palestinian city, not a settlement, an illegal Israeli settlement, not inside Israel. This is inside the Palestinian territories, even inside a Palestinian city. And so these daily humiliations, old men being made to wait and endure, sometimes even having to strip in front of Israeli soldiers, the humiliation of this of the occupation grinds on every day against the Palestinian people.
What about violence? I mean, one of the things you mentioned is Jenin refugee camp, the invasion that took place in, I believe it was spring of last year. There has been much controversy over this particular invasion because the refugee camp was, for the most part, leveled. And on the one hand, you had people saying it was a massacre, that hundreds of people were killed. Of course, that figure originally came from the Israeli military. And then on the other hand, you have people saying this was no massacre. This was armed people who were fighting and were fighting a war, basically, and those were the casualties. They admitted that, you know, some 20-odd civilians were killed, but said that, you know, over half of them were fighters. So I guess what my question is not just specifically about Jenin, but about violence against Palestinian civilians, and just, did you see that? Did you see any of that? What is your experience in it? What do you think of those two arguments I presented?
Well, first, specifically with Jenin, while the arguments have gone back and forth in terms of number of dead and what to call, you know, what happened, the basic sort of premise, or the basic, you know, fact is that the refugee camp is a civilian area. It is people's homes. This is where people live. And sort of the world accepted the Israeli version that the Israeli army had the right to go into this place and to attack it, and that the Palestinians who tried to defend their homes, who tried to defend the refugee camp from an invading army, were labeled as terrorists, and this was basically accepted, even though, as you point out, probably over half the casualties were civilians. I have seen civilians targeted and killed, shot at in the occupied territories. One day, towards the beginning of the invasion of Ramallah, when the Israeli troops had already taken over the entire city, there was a woman who was leaving the hospital. She was probably in her 50s, and she was a covered woman and fully dressed, a traditional Palestinian dress. And she was hobbling because she had suffered a leg injury, and she was just trying to make it home to join her family. She had been at the hospital for many days and was very scared for her children who were inside her home, and she didn't live very far from the hospital, so she tried to walk. And just as she got about a block from the hospital, she was shot down by an Israeli sniper. And even before people could get to her, who were just a block away, internationals who were around could get to her body, she was dead by the time they got there.
Was this during curfew?
This was during curfew when the Israeli army had taken control of the city of Ramallah and prevented people from leaving their homes and going about anywhere.
And so because it was during curfew, probably their argument would be, well, lethal force is used during curfew, you need to stay inside.
Well, this is what the Israeli army is trying to impose on the Palestinian cities, but as a measure of the nonviolent resistance of the Palestinians, they are seeking to break curfew and trying to live their lives.
Now, my understanding of the situation in not just in Jenin during the invasion, but in Nablus and Ramallah and Bethlehem was that, and this is according to human rights groups and even the Red Cross, that ambulances were not allowed in to some of these areas, were not allowed to retrieve injured people or dead people for many days, and that ambulances sometimes are stopped at checkpoints with people who've been shot even in the head and not allowed through, sometimes being held for, you know, an hour or more. Is this something you experienced in your time in the occupied territories, this kind of just control and kind of, I guess, did you experience any of this?
I did. Everything that you say has been documented, as you mentioned, by human rights groups. It has been witnessed not just by myself, but by other internationals on the ground. In fact, as I mentioned earlier, one of the roles that we play as internationals in the occupied territories is to escort ambulances, mainly because we have had the experience that when there is an international civilian on board, the Israeli army is less likely to hold that ambulance. We've had Palestinian ambulance drivers who've been detained for 5 or 6 hours, just sitting there on their knees on the street in the city, like in Ramallah, while their ambulance is detained for no reason. And meanwhile, people around the city can't get medical care. And not only were the ambulances being used for retrieving people and bringing them to hospital, for much of the times of the invasions, the ambulances were also being used to deliver food and medicine to people. So when ambulances were being detained, they were unable to get about the city and conduct very important humanitarian duties.
Was there any legitimate security reason for the Israelis to be preventing ambulances from entering areas where there was dying people or dead people, stopping them at checkpoints even when they had people inside who were dying? Is there any legitimate security reason, or did they offer a reason for this behavior?
The Israelis claim that it's because of security and that the ambulances are used for, you know, transporting what they call terrorists. But we have not seen any documented proof of this by the Israeli government. This is claimed often, but there have been other times when the Israelis have claimed things, and when they have found evidence, they call in the press to take a look and to document it, or they themselves take photographs. For instance, when rockets were being transferred by Palestinians from Nablus to Jenin, the Israeli military stopped the truck. They called a press conference on the spot, even though the area, you know, was in the West Bank and potentially dangerous. And the international press was there to document and record it. We have not seen that case in terms of the ambulances. And even if the Israelis wish to search an ambulance and check it for security purposes, that doesn't mean that they need to hold ambulances for 5 or 6 hours or arrest the same ambulance driver for 4 days in a row, as they did with my friend Maher in Ramallah during the sieges. So even if you allow for certain security concerns, the behavior of the Israeli army is quite excessive.
Now, I also heard that during the invasion, in particular last spring, that the Israeli army went after the civilian infrastructure. They didn't just attack military targets, but they went into Ministry of Education. I mean, the Middle East Children's Alliance, for example, has a community center with computers and other things in the West Bank, and that was destroyed. The computers smashed. I heard many things were stolen, personal items, computers, you know, electronic equipment that they seemingly deliberately destroyed civilian infrastructure, including media outlets, all kinds of government, you know, government buildings that were for administering, you know, health care and other things, nothing to do with military, and that some people feel this was a deliberate attempt at destroying any potential future Palestinian state. Did you see any of this, anything that would give you reason to believe that any of these things were true?
Oh, certainly. The Ministry of Education building that you mentioned was only a couple of blocks from my home in Ramallah, and we would constantly hear explosions coming from inside the building, and we later found out that this was the army blowing up doors that were locked, you know, going throughout the building, blowing up a safe and stealing money. The local supermarket that was near my house was ransacked and completely looted for food, of money from the safe. One of the Palestinian businessmen who owns the cell phone company in Palestine, he actually found out that his offices were going to be raided by, searched by the Israeli army, and he was able to get permission to be present when the army went through the building, and so he witnessed what happened, and he reported that soldiers went into the storerooms where they were holding the cell phones and basically were taking the chips that run the cell phones from inside the Palestinian phones and putting them inside their Israeli phones, so basically their phones would work without being charged. Being billed. Just simple petty things like this, but all, had nothing to do with security, nothing to do with, providing security for the State of Israel or anything like that. So we did see not just destruction of property, but actually also looting.
Looting from grocery stores? I heard reports of that. Did you see any of that?
Yeah, as I mentioned, the supermarket down the road from my home was completely, everything inside was completely turned over. This was a major grocery store. Food was stolen. The safe was blown open, and I forget how many thousands of shekels were stolen. Even from people's homes, people reported that even in their own homes, money was taken, or if some Palestinian families have money in Jordanian currency, and I saw for myself in Nablus and other places where that money was just simply ripped up by the soldiers so that it couldn't be used.
About 6 months ago, I interviewed a Jewish American young woman here from Santa Cruz who traveled with the International Solidarity Movement to Gaza and the West Bank, and she described that when she was in the Balata refugee camp, that the Israeli military came through and detained all men between, I think it was 14 and 55 or something like that, and so everyone in the camp was children or women and elderly, and the Israeli military for days on end came through, blew up water, basically destroyed the water system, blew holes through every house in the perimeter, and also blew in many doors. And she described how they, in the house that she and another Jewish American woman were staying, a Palestinian home, how the Israeli military people came in, I think it was 3 days in a row, and tore the place apart. And on the third day, she was saying that they had put all the things back on the wall and stuff. They came in and evidently one of the women who was pregnant inside the home went into shock.
Right.
And Melissa and her friend were afraid she would die. And so they somehow managed to talk the Israeli while they ended up just walking past them and going to the hospital and managed to get this woman medical attention. But when they came back, the home had been completely destroyed, according to Melissa, they had cracked a picture of, I think it was a religious picture, and they had hung the women's underwear all over the house. They had urinated in every room, completely smashed everything in the home. And basically, I'm just saying, did you see any of this kind of thing as well? Like, complete destruction of people's homes, not just theft of items, but did you see complete destruction of homes?
I've seen this for myself, not just in the Balata refugee camp, but actually in many refugee camps, also in cities. Unfortunately, this is behavior that goes on all the time by the Israeli army. It's behavior that goes unpunished. Oftentimes, there are commanders present even when this kind of behavior happens. And it's again, part of this sort of humiliation that's aimed at the Palestinian people, degrading them. Even something more, not as criminal in terms of stealing or overturning people's, destroying people's homes, but when the Israeli army invaded Ramallah at the end of March, one thing that Israeli soldiers did was they took over the Palestinian television station and began to broadcast pornography onto the Palestinian airwaves. So people who were scared at home, who were turning to their television stations for news, for updates as to what's going on, were treated to pornography provided by Israeli soldiers. So, we see this as part of a larger pattern of humiliation, of degradation, a message aimed at the Palestinian people.
Now, you hear often the argument that, well, at least CAMRA recently put out an advertisement. CAMRA is a right-wing group that promotes the Israeli government policies. They put out an ad around the nation, obviously a lot of money, basically saying that the root of Palestinian violence was hate education. Now, when you were living for 3 years in the occupied territories, I imagine you also probably went to Israel as well. Did you see any of this hate education? Supposedly on Palestinian television, there's promoting suicide bombing, trying to recruit people for such things, basically just promoting violence against Israelis and Jewish people in general. Did you see this?
I would say prior to the Intifada, there was a great effort of reform of education on the Palestinian side. In fact, the Palestinian Authority was only given the ability to produce textbooks and produce materials for school only within the last few years before the Intifada began. And so, and as they were replacing textbooks, these were a marked improvement over the earlier textbooks that were created by Jordan and Egypt that in many cases were 20, 30, 40 years old, and which represented views that were certainly hostile to Israel, but that were a product of a bygone age. In terms of television, you know, but I should say at the same time, you know, you look at Israeli textbooks, you don't even see the West Bank and Gaza marked as occupied territory. What you see them marked as is Judea and Samaria, which are the Israeli or Hebrew names for the area that many on the Israeli right believe, the Israeli right wing, that believe that Jews have a right to and need to populate with Jewish people. On the Palestinian airwaves, on television, what you see every day is what's happening in the streets. And so if Israel wants Palestinian television and news programs to change the content of what's being shown, of children being killed, of mothers being shot, of, you know, for instance, the famous case of Mohammed Dora, the young boy who was killed in Gaza in his father's arms, then basically Israel needs to stop killing people in the streets. It needs to stop carrying out this oppressive occupation, because this is the news. This is what's actually happening. They're not going to report sports scores from football matches in London or from the United States when the news is what's happening to the Palestinian people on the street.
So you're saying the violence that's seen on Palestinian television is violence that is perpetrated by the Israeli military against Palestinians and is played as news on Palestinian television?
It's played as news and it's played as, you know, like in many cases, warnings to the, you know, for instance, when the army is invading Ramallah, you know, the Palestinian news channels and the Arab news channels will show what's actually happening, and many people tune in to find out what potentially is happening in their neighborhood or to family members or to neighbors. This is the news. This is what's happening. When there is a bombing inside Israel, the only news you'll see inside Israel is about the bombing and what happens there. They don't show any other news, just as, unfortunately, whereas a bombing occurs, I shouldn't say unfortunately, but whereas a bombing occurs sporadically in Israel, and recently we've only seen one or two in the last 6 to 8 weeks, every single day in the Palestinian territories, great acts of violence are committed against the Palestinian people, and so it is news every single day.
So, and if you could speak up a little bit when you answer this, so are you saying that in the 3 years you were there, you didn't see on Palestinian television or in any other media for Palestinians, newspapers, whatever, calls for people to blow themselves up inside Israel, attempts to recruit suicide bombers, or any other basic hate education towards Israelis?
No, absolutely. They were certainly not broadcast on Palestinian television and not in the Palestinian newspapers that I saw any sort of recruiting efforts for suicide bombers, not at all. I mean, this misses, if one wishes to understand why there are suicide bombing, one needs simply to go live in the West Bank for a few days to see the degradation, the humiliation, the hopelessness. And this isn't to justify it in any way, but if we do want to seek to understand how people can be driven to the point where they feel the only thing they could do is blow themselves up and blow other people up, you need to just simply experience life as it is in the occupied territories.
And the only way to ever end the violence is to come to an understanding of it. So we only have a couple minutes left. Maybe we should end just with one more question and then some contact information, some of your resources, places you like to go to read about what's happening, or books you recommend. But I have one final question before we end with that. You are Jewish American. Were you born here in the U.S.?
Yes.
Have you experienced what kinds of, what brought you to the position you're at now, and what kinds of repercussions have you experienced for speaking your truth on this?
I was living and working in Jerusalem before the Intifada began, and while I had studied the Middle East and this conflict and was aware of things from an academic or from a research sort of point of view, being there on the ground and seeing the settlements and how they continue to expand and seeing the entrenchment of the occupation even before the Intifada began certainly made me realize more tangibly what it meant, what the situation really was like on the ground. And then when the Intifada began and I saw the overwhelming use of lethal force by the Israeli army, in particular the use of American-made weaponry such as Apache helicopters and F-16 aircraft against basically an unarmed civilian population, I really felt first and foremost as an American citizen that I needed to do something and to protest, to register my protest. And then once I also saw how international civilians were treated differently by the Israeli army and were accorded less violence against them by the Israeli army, even when they stood with Palestinian people, I really felt that it was important as an American citizen, as somebody who believes that there should be freedom for the Palestinian people, that I needed to stand there and to do something and to take action.
Have you been attacked if you had death threats, has your character been attacked because of standing up as a Jewish person and speaking out against the policies of the Israeli army and government?
In this country, my family has received hate mail and phone calls, and people have threatened and have actually protested outside of my house. My family had to leave their home for a few days last spring because of the threats against them, and of course there have been death threats against me and also other members of my family. But to date, I've only been confronted a couple of times by people, nobody who's tried to act violently against me.
Why do you think so much hatred is directed at you?
I think partly because I come from a Jewish family, and people, unfortunately, there's a lot of misinformation about the situation on the ground in the occupied territories, and not just now, but even before the Intifada began. And people don't have the proper context by which to understand what is happening, and unfortunately, there is, the media is complicit very much. The mainstream American media is very much complicit in presenting a view or an understanding of the conflict that is really off the mark. And so when people dare to speak out and dare to present eyewitness accounts of what they've seen, it rubs people the wrong way because they're not used to this information. We have had many Jewish Americans and other Americans who've come to the occupied territories who had a certain view ahead of time. And when they got there and they saw what the situation was like, really, I don't want to say they converted or anything like that, but they were awakened, in a sense, to the realities on the ground and how different the realities were to what was being represented here in the States.
How can people contact the organization you work with, the International Solidarity Movement? If you can just give the website and any phone numbers, and just also any other groups or books or information you think people should look into.
There's our website is www.palsolidarity.org, and our contact information is on there, including information on how to come to the occupied territories or how to be part of a support group here in the States. And for news and information, I usually look at an Israeli newspaper, Haaretz. On the website, it's haaretz.com.
How do you spell that?
Haaretz. And then there's also the Electronic Intifada, all one word, .net. And for other groups here in the States that are active, there's a couple of Jewish groups, that, like Jews Against the Occupation or Not in My Name, that are getting very active on this issue. Of course, there's a group called Sustain, which is specifically targeting America or American citizens' involvement through our taxpayers.
What is it called?
Sustain.
Sustain?
Yeah, Sustain.
Do they have a website?
They have a website, sustain.org. Very much looking at the role America plays in perpetuating the occupation.
Mm-hmm. Anything more you want to say today?
No, I appreciate the opportunity to come on your show.
Thanks so much, Adam.
Thank you.
All right.
Bye.
Bye. I was just speaking with Adam Shapiro of the International Solidarity Movement. He spoke today in the Bay Area, and I was lucky enough to get an interview with him this afternoon.